recorded KTOO. Welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Thursday, March 6, 2025. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gunnath Cheesh, Hawa Tuk Suknusum Salamat. Thank you for joining the conversation. Today, 49 Riders is holding open mics in Juno, plus information on some upcoming virtual class options in sketch comedy and playwriting. Juno saved the Kimball organ in the state office building almost 50 years ago, and the Alaska State Museum is thinking about its future with two events tomorrow. And AWARE's Women of Distinction Gala celebrates five women this Saturday, March 8th. We chat with a couple of the honorees today and preview the event. Those conversations coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Alaska Airlines Club 49. Membership information available at club49hub.com. You're listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm Boston Christopher. 49 Riders is a group empowering and expanding a statewide community of riders. And now in Juno, they are offering an open mic. The next one is March 13th, and here to share more about it with us is board member Katie Bosler. Gunnath Cheesh, Sha Yigudi, thank you so much, Katie. It's a pleasure to have you in the studio. Wasiyati, how's it going?
It's great to be here, Boston. Yes.
Yes, and of course, we should also always talk about your show that you do over on the sister station KRNN.
Yes, that is Stormy Weather from 7 to 9 p.m. on Wednesdays. And that is a program that I share with Carolyn Miner, my friend and neighbor. So we kind of are every other week-ish. So she was on last night, and I will be on this coming Wednesday.
Awesome. That's
7
great.
7 to 9, KRNN. Awesome. Lots of fun.
You know it. Okay, so let's get everybody caught up to speed here. What is 49 Riders?
Well, 49 Riders has been around now for, gosh, I think we're going on 15 years. And this is kind of a support, networking, education organization for Alaska writers. But you don't really have – when some people say, well, I'm not a writer. No. If you're writing in a journal or if you just love writing or even reading and want to know more about the craft of writing, the door is open. You can become a member of 49 Writers.
So you don't have to be – a lot of people think that they have to be a narrative storyteller kind of writer. And you don't have to do that to be a member of 49 Writers.
No, not at all. Just be interested in writing and reading. That's the only qualification.
I love that. And it's easy to join, right? 49writers.org?
Sure, yeah. You just go to 49writers.org. There's an annual membership that's at, I think it's $60. And if you are a senior or veteran, it's $49. We also have scholarships, so that you know anyone can join.
No barrier to entry, basically.
No,
yeah,
not at all.
Yeah. Now I know that 49 Riders, in addition to being a support group and networking group for folks, you know, they offer classes, they offer various different things. But now you're having what's called the 49 Riders Open Mic, and you had one last month.
Yeah, actually, we've had two this year already.
Oh, you've had two?
Yeah, we had one in mid-January.
Okay.
And then it was so successful, we thought, hey, let's just keep this going. So we're having another one a week from tonight at the Rookery, 6:30 to 8 p.m., and then we'll have a final one for the spring, April 17th, then take a break for the summer, and then we hope to get it back going after tourist season in the fall.
Gotcha. And folks can come, and what can they do there?
Well, it's an open mic that you can read anything up to 5 minutes. So most people will come in with maybe spoken word poetry or your essay or part of an essay. We also have, of course, plenty of local published authors, people who have written books who are right here in Juno who will come in and read maybe a part of their book. We had, for example, Kevin Myers read part of his new manuscript for his next book at our last one. And it's pretty open. I mean, you can even read something by somebody else if you, you know, you feel like this is a piece of writing that needs to be shared with people.
Okay.
And it's just a really nice opportunity for people to hear their work or someone else's read out loud. And the rookery is just such a perfect setting for it. You know, I mean, you have these, you know, these gorgeous paintings by Arne Weimer now all over the cafe, as people who frequent the rookery know, on Seward Street. You have really nice lighting. The sound is nice. We have a good sound system. Our board member, Jeff Kirsch, owns that and just brings it in and sets it up. And also, you know, Travis and staff are there, you know, selling the goodies, maybe some cookies or scones or, you know, wine, beer, and tea or coffee. And so it's just a really nice atmosphere.
That cornflake chocolate chip cookie.
Oh, I haven't tried that one.
Oh, man. I don't know if they're still making it, but that's like, that's my kryptonite. It's so good. Now, you don't have to be a writer to be part of the open mic. You can just go as an audience member,
Oh,
right?
Of course. Yeah. And we encourage people, you know, who love hearing spoken word writing or poetry to definitely attend. Yes.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And
we need, and you know what the thing, too, is that you need that energy.
Yeah.
So we just love to have you. Come on down. The more the merrier to the rookery a week from tonight.
March 13th at 6:30 p.m. at the Rookery. I think it's great that writers in Juneau who are sharing, you know, like you're talking about Kevin Myers sharing part of his manuscript, things they're working on, just so they can get feedback.
Exactly.
It's a wonderful place to share.
Well, the other thing, too, that I know as a writer is this, I'm sure you've discovered this, there's nothing like reading your work aloud.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes you think you got a decent draft, it's okay on paper, but you just read it aloud, and then some of the things that you might want to alter or shift or make a few edits just kind of come right to the surface.
What are you working on right now?
Well, I have the latest thing I wrote was I got a bee in my bonnet about the federal workers being fired, especially from the Forest Service, and the situation with the visitor center. So just wrote an op-ed that was in the Alaska Beacon this week and also the Juneau Empire. I also have a newsletter, KDB's Chronicles. I publish essays. I think the last one was about a spontaneous tandem paraglide in Hatcher Pass on my husband and I's 35th wedding anniversary road trip.
Oh wow!
So I had a lot of fun with that one.
That's cool. Excellent.
Yeah, a lot of people have these. It's Substack is kind of one of the main platforms. I guess you'd say a major platform these days for people.
Yeah, it's major now. Yeah.
Everybody and their sister or brother has a newsletter if they want to, because you can.
It's the new way to blog.
Yeah, but it's really nice because it's a great format. It's easy to use, and it's a good way to build up a readership and to share your work with other people.
I love that. Now, you're also offering some virtual classes. I had the opportunity to talk the other day via the power of the internet, and I'll post the whole interview online with Joanna Castle Miller.
Okay.
She's teaching a class called Writing Sketch Comedy,
yes,
which begins this Sunday. They'd love for you to register by tomorrow, the 7th, if you want to do this. It's going to be Sunday for a number of weeks. Sundays from noon to 2, and you get a discount if you're a member of 49 Writers, but I thought it would be great just to hear in Joanna's own words a little bit about what you might learn in the class. So I'm going to play that here for us so we can hear a little bit about what Joanna says about this class. Writers here in Juneau who might be thinking about taking this class, but they say, I'm not a sketch comedy writer. Right. But you can learn lateral skills from writing sketch comedy in terms of any other kind of writing that you might do. Right. So is that something that would be beneficial for writers of other genres to take this class?
100%. Yeah. I mean, I'm not ever going to tell someone you couldn't perform live sketch in Juneau. I bet that you not only can, but that people do. And I'm sure that there are groups that could form from any community that would make amazing live sketch performers. But if you're thinking like, that's not really what I want to do, or just, I'm not realistically going to get on SNL, why would I even try this? I think that it's actually an incredibly useful tool. And like I mentioned, I use it in all of my writing now. I mean, the principles show up in tons of media. You'll see it in novels. I was just reading Where'd You Go, Bernadette, the novel, and I was like, that's a sketch. It's in comedic movies. It's in every single sitcom. Sketch comedy is in I Love Lucy, all the way to like Abbott Elementary. It's in prestige TV shows like Mad Men. There's moments of The White Lotus where I'm like, oh, that's a sketch. So it's just kind of knowing what you're looking for. But I think the skills are, it teaches you timing. It teaches you execution of a joke. But more than that, I could just teach a class on telling a joke. It's how can you manipulate that joke over time? And so if you write longer form work, then it's how do you escalate a joke, maybe even all the way through a novel? How do you develop and show a clear point of view that's funny for a character that maybe you want to use for a lighthearted break, even in something that's dramatic? So because it's scripted, there's a lot of room to say, yeah, but what's one more specific thing about this person? What's one more piece of backstory that we could put in that would make it even funnier? And for longer form stuff, those are all skills that you end up using, whether or not you realize that you're doing it in both ways. So those are just a few things. I mean, we would cover all of that in the class, but those are just a few of the things that I think, like, just coming from my own experience as a writer, it made me so much better, and it was all intuitive after I had learned how to do sketch.
That's Joanna Castle Miller, who's teaching the writing sketch comedy, yeah. And she is going to be starting that class this Sunday. You can register now. Basically, you go to 49writers.org/events, and you can register. And then, Katie, there's another class coming up on playwriting.
Yeah, there is, yeah. And just to getting back to Joanna, it looks like this program will be Sundays, March 9th to April 13th, 6 weeks, mm-hmm. And it's noon to 2 p.m. And she's from in New York. Yeah. So this is online.
Yeah, it's going to be virtual. That's what's great about being able to be here in Juneau and being able to take this course.
Well, that's the thing I think what changed for 49 Writers and revolutionized offerings for a lot of entities was the pandemic and mm-hmm. having things on Zoom. So yeah, the other one, and this has to do with theater as well, is intermediate playwriting with Ryan Buin is happening. That's just a one-time – no, actually, no, that's a series as well. It starts April 14th at 6 to 8 p.m., and that's going to be Mondays, April 14th to May 12th. So that's a five-week program. And that's designed for writers with a basic grasp of dramatic writing concepts and who strive to – develop into playwrights.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that sounds like a great class. And Ryan is actually based in Anchorage.
Yeah, he's an Anchorage-based guy. Yeah. He's gone to the Valdez Theater Conference for a number of years
Well, you probably know this
I know
guy,
Ryan,
right?
Yeah. I know Joanna actually as well.
And the thing that's nice too is, yes, there is a fee for both of these series, but scholarships are available. And you can go to 49writers.org and you look to these events and then scroll down and you can fill out a scholarship form online.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But there is no cost for the open mic that you are hosting here in Juneau, 49 Writers Open Mic. It is at the Rookery. It will be on March 13th. That's next Thursday from 6:30 to 8 p.m. And then again on April 17th. And of course, you can always find out more at 49writers.org/events.
That is right, Boston.
Thank you so much, Katie Gunnath-Cheesh.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity to come on the air to talk about these things. And folks, don't be shy. Come on out and read something up to 5 minutes or cheer on your friends and neighbors at the Rookery next Thursday, the 13th of March, 6:30 to 8 p.m. Open mic.
Appreciate it, Katie Gunnath-Cheesh.
Thank you.
Okay, this is Juneau Afternoon from KTOO.
Support for Juneau Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juneau with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juneau. More at heritagecoffee.com.
This is Juneau Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Tomorrow, the Alaska State Museum is presenting two events about the Kimball Theater organ in the state office building. Juneau saved the organ almost 50 years ago, and now it's time to brainstorm the future and what it would take to keep the instrument going for years to come. And the museum has brought in some experts to help us out and to play. And I am joined now in the studio by Jonas Nordwall, professional organist in the Hall of Fame of the American Theater Organ Society. And he's also the father to our other guest, Chris Nordwall, of Rose City Organ Builders in Portland, Oregon. Gunnath Cheese, Jonas, how are you? Wasa Iati?
Oh, glad to be here. Actually, this is my third time in Juneau.
Awesome. Well, yeah. Welcome. So, and Chris, welcome to you, Wasa Iati. How's it going?
It's going very well. Thanks for having us.
Of course. And I am also joined in the studio here by Ellen Carley, conservator for the Alaska State Museum, who will be giving a lecture tomorrow evening, March 7th. So we'll talk about both of these things. So let's start with you, Ellen, first, in terms of why did the Alaska State Museum start thinking about the organ and its future, and how did you get these folks involved?
So we kind of got an organ committee going just before pandemic struck to think about the future of the organ and future organists and fundraisers and perhaps silent movies with the theater accompaniment, and then pandemic happened. And for a musical instrument, it's terrible not to be played for an extended period of time. It's rough on the instrument for reasons these gentlemen understand far better than me. But when we came out of pandemic and we tried to find our traditional organ tuner, who was the last remaining employee of the company that built the organ almost 100 years ago, we couldn't find him. Turns out he passed away during pandemic. And so I was calling all over the place looking for anyone who could tell me what had happened and who can help us take care of this organ. And that's how we came to find Rose City Organ Builders and Chris Nordwall.
Okay. And Chris, had you heard about this? You knew of this organ in the state office building or no?
A little bit, yeah. The American Theater Organ Society, some of the local chapters would do cruises into Juneau and bring a bunch of organists with them. And I had heard about it through that.
Okay.
And then it wasn't until I got contacted by Ellen and we came up a year ago or so and saw it firsthand and worked on it and tuned it.
Had it been played in that time since the pandemic, Ellen? Had it been?
Almost not at all, because of course you don't want a crowd gathering during pandemic, right?
Right.
So, and some of the organ players were elderly and were protecting themselves and yeah, so it went for probably a good 2 years without getting played.
So Chris, what was the state of the organ when you came up here?
Not overly terrible, but
that's good.
you know, with something that, given its age, and then also in addition to not being played that often, you know, the creaks set in, and the so either you sit and you have to start playing it to really see where it's at. But yeah, she's not the happiest at the moment. So,
and it has, I know people can find out this history, and people who've been in Juneau for a long time will know. I didn't know this, but it had been moved a couple times throughout its history. And I know I'll have a link that I can share that you all shared with me that sort of goes over that history. But it's been in the state office building since 1976, 77, somewhere around there. So, you know, we're coming up on 50 years in that one location. And I think it had been moved at least twice before that. But it's been in there, and it had been played regularly pretty much every Friday. I do want to play a little clip of – this was from a documentary that KTO used to do, Rain Country, and there was a little bit of some playing near the end of that documentary, just so people who may not have heard the sounds of this organ, just to get a little bit of it. Now, this is an old video, so it won't sound as crisp as it might be in person, but it'll give us a little bit of a taste. So let's just take a listen to just a little bit of this.
Thank you.
gives us a little bit of a sense of what it's all about. Now that was something that was. That song is called Dizzying Keys. Is that?
Dizzy Fingers.
Dizzy Fingers. Obviously, Jonas knows all about it. So can you tell us a little bit about that music, Jonas?
It was composed by Zez Comfrey. And he was one of the early people back in the 20s who started writing music for piano teachers. It wasn't just writing, you know, for performance. And did several different styles of music that they could use with their students. And that happens to be his best piece in many ways, and it was his most popular piece. And it was recorded by anybody that was a keyboard player. And, you know, I started on the accordion, and everybody was playing Dizzy Fingers. Even Lawrence Welkemeyer and Florin were playing Dizzy Fingers. So.
Right, right. And is there something unique about an organ like the Kimball organ that takes a piece like Dizzy Fingers and makes it even more special in some way?
Well, you look, the theater organ is a very unique instrument. It's not a regular organ. The concept of behind the design was to be like an orchestra. And it was something, well, you could say it was like a one-man band. Mm. And the popularity of it, of course, as an instrument for silent movies was, instead of having to pay an orchestra as your musical accompaniment, you paid one musician. Mm. And when they started to come in, about 1914, 1915 is when the craze hit. And then there were probably something around 4,000 or 5,000 instruments that were manufactured, you know, 10 to 12 year period. Kimball was one of the big names at the time. And the Kimball representative was a gentleman by the name of Sandy Balcom in Seattle. He had a pipe organ service and eventually went into the electronic organ business too in the 50s. And I had met him about the time of the Seattle's World's Fair in 62, and very enthusiastic. He was the type of person, he could sell anything. And he was very smart how he conducted his business. And for example, the instrument that's here is a good example of what it takes to make a sale. And it's not as complete as it should have been, but yet I'm sure Sandy had a good sales pitch to make the sales. So, the other thing is when this thing started, it was actually the Wurlitzer company that started. And the idea of putting percussions on it came from the fact they were manufacturing carousel band organs at the time. And so the mechanics that ran the percussions, the snare drums, cymbals, and everything were taken into the theater organ, pipe organ world to augment the instrument so it was, you know, a more complete orchestral instrument. Mm. And of course, when the talking films came in, that removed the instruments with a few exceptions. I mean, probably the best known one is Radio City Music Hall, because that was used all the way clear into the 70s. And it's still occasionally played, not the way it was. And part of the reasoning is the hall's up for commercial rental all the time. Mm-hmm. And it probably starts at about $150,000 a night now.
That's, right. Yeah. I was just in Los Angeles last summer, I think it was, and they do have one at the El Capitan, the theater. They play it before certain events, and it was magical to see that thing.
That was from the original San Francisco Fox. And that is one of five organs that were probably the magnum opus that Wurlitzer built.
Because that's big. It's giant. It's a little bit bigger than this one.
It's 36 sets of pipes.
It's seven. Pretty big. Yeah. Now, Chris, you are from Rose City Organ Builders. Are you still building things like the Kimball organ? Is there still a demand for that?
Rebuilding,
yeah. Okay.
So, and given the number of venues and so forth that either don't have the financial backing to keep instruments going or people to play them, there's a lot of instruments out there that are just sort of sitting kind of dormant.
Yeah.
So In some cases, we've saved, you know, a handful of instruments from going to the landfill mm-hmm. on our nickel to go out and make sure that they don't end up there and that hopefully they'll find a second chance at making music again.
Right.
And which is part of the what we hope if this project at the museum, at the SOB building, happens. We have similar Kimball parts in stock that we've been sitting on for far too long, and it would be really nice if they found a home.
Nice.
But, yeah, there's most of, especially when you're dealing with theater organs, a lot of that is what is already existing and what can be restored and reused.
I see. Okay. So let's talk about these events that are happening, because it's all part of this project for the State Office Building and the Kimball Organ in the State Office Building. We're talking to the Alaska State Museum with Jonas Nordwall, Chris Nordwall, and Ellen Carley. So tell me what's happening tomorrow at noon. Yes.
So we usually have a free public organ concert at noon in the State Office Building there in the 8th floor atrium. And tomorrow at noon, Jonas Nordwall will be the guest organist playing over that noon hour. So that's kind of a special treat for Juno.
Okay. What are we going to hear, Jonas? Can you tease us?
Oh, a combination of things. I don't tend to be a period person where a lot of theater organists, you know, they'll want to play music of the past. And part of the reason behind that, I was involved with a corporation called Organ Grinder. We had two large pizza parlors with pipe organs, one in Portland and one in Denver. And this is back in the 70s and 80s. And you had to play the music of the day. ABBA was on the top of the hit list, of course. Tijuana Brass stuff and everything. And I've, even though I don't do that as a living anymore, I still kind of keep my fingers active playing newer tunes that the general public know.
Your fingers are still dizzy.
They've slowed down. They're not as dizzy as they used to be. So,
but that's going to be tomorrow at noon at the State Office Building. Jonas Nordwall, professional organist. He's in the Hall of Fame of the American Theater Organ Society. He'll be playing tomorrow at noon for a full hour, which is going to be awesome. And then, Ellen, tell us a little bit about what's happening at the museum at 7.
So it's First Friday. Ray Juno loves First Friday.
Yay.
Yeah. And so our First Friday event will include a lecture at 7 p.m., which I'll give a PowerPoint with some terrific historic photos of the story of the organ, like how did it get here and where did it move to and kind of that tale. I'll take about 20 minutes to do that. My boss, Addison Field, who's the chief curator at the museum, will give 5 or 10 minutes of financial realities, so that'll be a little sad. But then I'm hoping we have a good half an hour or so of question and answer with the experts, with the Nordwalls, and with the Juno Organ Committee, and talk about its future. Like, what does Juno want to do this again? Do we mm-hmm. want to save this organ again? And what does the future look like? And just have that public conversation, because all of us are smarter than any of us, and it's a community thing.
Well, it sounds like Chris has some parts that we might be able to use, and I guess we just need to probably raise some money and make that happen, because it is such a lovely thing to be able to go and listen to that music and have it be weekly like that, to be able to have that concert available or for special events or whatnot. And where can we find out more about it? Is it on the lam.alaska.gov website?
Oh, I think that it is, yeah.
Okay.
I think it's on your community calendar, perhaps, the KTOO. No,
oh.
The Jack has the community calendar.
The community calendar. And you can probably see more at lam.alaska.gov, which is the Library Archives Museum website. And that is a wonderful thing. And it's Jonas and Chris Nordwall joining us and in town. Thank you for coming and being part of this journey with us. We love the Kimball Organ and the State Office Building. And go tomorrow night at 7 o'clock to listen to Ellen's speech and lecture, rallying cry,
presentation,
all those good things. And of course, tomorrow at noon at the State Office Building, Jonas Nordwall. Where can we follow you all in terms of websites and things like that?
My company has a just about up-to-date website at rosecityorgans.com.
Okay. Okay. RoseCityOrgans.com.
Yeah.
Excellent. And Jonas, are you on the social media?
Yes, I am. And you can Google me and YouTube me as well.
YouTube me. Yeah. I love that. That's great. Well, really appreciate you all being here today. Gwyneth Cheesh for sharing this story. And we look forward to hearing the music tomorrow.
Well, thank you.
Thanks, Boston. You always do right by us. Appreciate you.
Gwyneth Cheesh. Up next, we preview the Saturday Women of Distinction event from AWARE by meeting a couple of the honorees for this year's award. This is Juno Afternoon from KTOO. This is Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. AWARE's 2025 Women of Distinction Gala will be held on Saturday, March 8th at Centennial Hall. The doors open at 5:30 p.m. with the program and the dinner starting at 6:30 p.m. This year's honorees are Becky Borer, Sherry Patterson, Valerie Ringel, and Brenda Taylor. There will also be a special posthumous Lifetime Service Award to Leona Santiago for the work she did with MMIW and survivors of domestic and sexual violence. I'm joined now in studio by two of this year's honorees, as well as Sarah Lynn Tabachnik from AWARE. Gwyneth Cheesh, Sarah Lynn, Wasaiti, how's it going?
It's a pleasure to be here. All is well. Thank you, Boston.
Okay, great. And would you take the honor of introducing our two, we have two of the four honorees here in the studio with us today.
We do.
Yeah, would you introduce them for us?
Sure, I'd be very happy to. Although I'm going to really allow them to introduce themselves.
Of course.
Right? So Becky Borer is here, and we do things alphabetically for this event, so we're doing
yes,
it like that.
Yes, I think that's a good way to
and,
do it.
And Brenda Taylor is also here today.
Awesome. Becky, Gwyneth Cheesh, Wasaiti, how's it going?
Thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
Of course. And Brenda, Gwyneth Cheesh, welcome back. You were here last week for the STEAM event that's happening,
right.
But now you're being honored for being a STEAM advocate, which is kind of cool. But Gwyneth Cheesh, Wasaiti, how's it going?
Well, thank you very much.
Awesome. That's so good. Okay, so Sarah Lynn, will you just give us a sort of, well, first I think we should mention AWARE.
Sure.
And the organization AWARE and what you do. Let's start there.
Okay. AWARE is Juno's domestic violence sexual assault program agency. And so our sort of the backbone of what we do is service to survivors. And we serve recent survivors as well as people who have a history of surviving and are working on various issues. We have emergency safe shelter. We have legal services. We, pardon me, have housing services. We have transitional housing, emergency safe housing, of course. And we actually just maybe fairly recently, we opened 7 units of long-term housing, permanent support, permanent housing for folks. So that's pretty exciting. We also have a men's program. So working with men who have caused harm and inviting them to learn new ways of relating to themselves, to their partners, to their families, to their communities. And we do some prevention work as well, you know, because the thing about domestic and sexual violence, 100% preventable.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, you can find out more at the website awareak.org,
right.
Which is the website for AWARE. So let's talk about Women of Distinction. When did this begin and why do you do this particular program?
This began 29 years ago.
Woo, I love it.
So I guess we're going back to the 1990s, right? Yeah. And I worked at AWARE then, I'm happy to say. So, like, I have a nice historical perspective.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the event started because we recognized that there are women in our community who, like, we say hi to, perhaps, or maybe we don't even know them, or we think we know them. And behind all of that is are these rich
lives of generosity, of compassion, of care that are deeper than we realized and than we knew. And so when people nominated women to be honored, it might be like, oh, I know Becky, or oh, I know Brenda. And then I would read their nomination form and be like, I had no idea. So there's really a lot of magic, I think, that happens, and a lot of celebration. And for AWARE, where, of course, we're working with survivors most every day and really trying to support healing and growing, it's wonderful to be able to not be in a crisis mode, but rather in a celebratory mode and working with celebrating the wonderful things that people, women, have contributed to our community.
It's really interesting that you were talking about, because I think people, like you said, you define people by sometimes by their job, you know, or by the one thing that you know them from. But then when you sort of peel back the layers and you start to recognize, oh, they do so many things. They're a parent, they're, you know, a runner, they're, you know, into board games or whatever it might be, you know, something, their different hobbies and the things that people do that make up a whole person.
Exactly.
Right? And that's really fantastic. And this event seems to be the opportunity to do that, right?
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool. So how do you find the Women of Distinction each year? Is it a nomination process?
It is a nomination process. It begins, I think, around generally July in the summer. And then nominations close around September. The board of directors reviews them and chooses honorees. And then the process begins of moving things along, getting invitation lists, guest lists from the women who are being honored, sending things out, working with the caterer. We have an auction at the event, a silent auction, a dessert auction, a live auction. So it's really a AWARE's fundraiser as well. So we're working on all of those aspects.
I see. Okay. And you nominate others. People don't nominate themselves.
That's right. People don't nominate themselves. Staff is not allowed, or board members are not allowed to nominate people.
Gotcha. Okay.
So we really count on the community.
Okay. So I want to mention a couple of the people who aren't here, and then we'll talk to the ones who are here. So again, as I mentioned in the open, they are doing a special posthumous Lifetime Service Award to Leona Santiago for the work that she did with MMIW and survivors of domestic and sexual violence. Is there anything that you want to say about Leona and her honor on the air today?
You can see like I'm smiling because I love Leona, and Leona worked at AWARE for a period of time. And I remember she and I on a plane flying into Huna together, and it was just so beautiful to be there with her. Her roots are in Huna, and just navigating what we were doing and working with people there was really beautiful. And her dedication and commitment and joy for life was pretty great. So all that and all what you said.
Yeah, we're going to miss her.
Yeah.
Two of the other honorees, Sherry Patterson, and it's listed as Overcomer. On the page for her award. And can you talk a little bit about Sherry Patterson?
Yeah, Sherry, she's done lots of stuff. Again, you know, when you think about somebody, oh, I know Sherry, she works at Search, and she had a career in finance for CBJ for 36 years. And, is she involved with the Black Awareness Association? She's done so many things and continues to do so many things on the Healing Hands Foundation Board of Directors. She was a former on-call religious counselor at Lemon Creek Correctional Center.
Wow.
She now is the main pastor at a local church. So she's just like, I think actually has received lots of statewide recognition as well, working yeah. some with the Rasmussen Foundation. She was in a grand marshal for the July 4th parade a few years ago. So,
nice.
Yeah, I think she's got a public presence.
Yeah, Miss Sherry is a force for sure.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Right? She makes things happen.
And again, like everything you just said, sometimes you don't know anything about that. You might know her from one of those areas, but you didn't know all the other things that she was doing. And then Valerie Ringel, listed parent, teacher, and companion. Can you tell us a little bit about Valerie?
Yeah. So Valerie, she began working in Anchorage. She was a teacher. And then she moved to, pardon me, to the Lower Yukon School District. And then and worked in different communities, Pilot Station, Alakanuk. She taught English and history for a time. And she took a little break, was focused on her raising her children, and subsequently became a secondary literacy leader at JDHS, worked at the alternative high school. And right now, like, her focus is working with other people, some people from St. Vincent de Paul, and helping support them with financial literacy, mentoring them, and really, like, supporting people independently.
This is so inspiring already, right? It's so great. And we haven't even had the ceremony yet. It's on Saturday. We're talking about the Women of Distinction Awares 2025 Gala that will be happening Saturday, March 8th at Centennial Hall. The dinner and program begin at 6:30, and you can find and get information on tickets at awareak.org. So, Becky Borer, let's talk to you. We'll go in alphabetical order because that's the way we do things. So, Becky, it's listed here. It says women's running group leader and mentor. Can you tell us a little bit about those things first, and then we'll dive in and find out more about you?
Yeah, I am a coordinator of a local running group called Juno Women Running, and it's a running group that is quite diverse. We have women who are new runners, women who competed in high school and college, women who are in their 60s, and women in between. And I mean, I started running in my mid-30s, and so a little over a decade. And I think our superpower is our diversity and our willingness and to support each other and you know, just rally around each other. And so, yeah, that's
nice. Okay. And it's interesting. How did you find running in your 30s? When did that come up for you, or how did that come up for you?
Well, part of it, I think what a big part of it was when I moved here, a few months after I moved here, I met my now husband, and he was into running, and he was on a much different level of running than I am and was. But he exposed me to different trails and, different mountains, and we got to explore together, and he was patient with me. And, you know, again, I'm not at the level that he is, but it kind of helped me to realize what I might be able to do. And, there also was a running group some years ago led by a woman named Nancy Jones. And, I learned a lot from her about discipline and so, yeah, sorry, I lost my train of thought.
No, it's okay.
But so I just really fell in love with running and that feeling of just strength and being able to decompress and process. And it really, in so many ways, changed my life. And it's a weird thing to say, like something like running, but it really has. And it's been amazing that I'm able to be part of a group where some of the opportunities that I've had, I'm able to share those and help other women experience similar experiences.
Absolutely. And do you know who nominated you for this award?
Some of the women from the running group, Holly Handler and Heather Parker and Hannah Bailey. Their letters were I don't even have words for it. They were so touching and kind, and it feels weird because I feel like I get so much out of being part of the group, and so in some ways it's been a little bit overwhelming, but I'm floored and honored.
That's so great. So let's peel the layer back a little bit. Something besides running about you.
My day job is I'm a news reporter. I work for the Associated Press, and I've been in Juneau now for 15 years.
Wow. Okay. Did you come here with the Associated Press?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's so interesting. What do you report on for them?
My primary is state government and politics, but a bit of everything.
A bit of everything. That's so awesome. Okay, one more thing that isn't work or running.
Let me see.
A hobby.
This is going to sound weird, but we live in a place where we can't have pets, but I'm enamored of pets, especially dachshunds. It's the only thing I can think of right now.
Dachshunds. I love it. That's great. You love dachshunds, even though you can't have one. That's so great. And I know on Saturday you have to give a speech, mm-hmm. right? What's the topic or what is your idea for your speech? Are you still working on it?
I'm still working on it. Talking a bit about kind of how I got into running and those who helped get me there and those who inspire me.
Absolutely. That's cool. Well, congratulations, Becky. I'm really happy for your honor, and I'm glad to know we have an AP reporter right here in Juneau. That's kind of cool. Brenda Taylor, It says community educator and STEAM advocate. I know we talked a lot about STEAM last week, but tell me a little bit about your community educator profile.
So it's always funny trying to describe yourself in pet phrases like that. And this was no exception. And I think what I meant by community educator is not so much that I do a whole lot of educating outside of the schools, but that I really believe that the community should be an educator inside of the schools. Mm. And there was no way to say that quickly.
I see.
And to back up a little bit, I completely grew up in education, literally. Like sometimes my family would be living on the second floor of the school below.
Oh, wow.
And so all of my life, I've been a teacher or a student and thought that thinking about school is the most important thing in the world. And I don't mean the institution, but the idea of like, that's where we get to create the world that we want. It's just such an amazing, amazing thing, right? You get to visualize it, talk about it in theory, and then you get to go and try to make it happen every day. And I think that that's such an important thing that it shouldn't be left just to teachers, administrators. Obviously, students should be involved. Parents should be involved so much more than they are, and the rest of the community as well. And so moving to Juneau was the first time that when I first came here, that I wasn't actually teaching in the school, that I was a parent of young kids. And I was like, how do I do my big immersion in schools, which is the thing that I think is more important than anything in the world, when I'm not a teacher? I don't want to step on their toes. I don't want to tell them how to do it. But I really wanted to help facilitate that. There are so many other wonderful things out there that teachers don't have the time to research and find. And so that's how I started doing a lot of site council and chairing that and all sorts of things that moved off of that when I did site councils at various places. And I was at the charter school for a while, and I ended up teaching again. I couldn't stop that. And then the STEAM advocate part came really because, like, in the 20-teens was the time when STEAM education was getting another resurgence, and it was the JSD was revising its science curriculum, and they were looking for more input. And I was like, this is the perfect place, time, and structure that we can create a way for the amazing STEAM community that we have here to connect with our teachers and educators. So we developed a newsletter and a database, and we had these big networking events, and we did workshops for teachers where we brought together STEAM people and teachers to share how those STEAM people, like what were the ideas and the ways of thinking that were shaping their jobs? And how do we pass that on to teachers to think about? Would you like an example?
Sure.
So, for instance, one of the conversations, and my job would be to go and talk to STEAM experts and say, so, like, what's important? Like, Boston, what's important in your job? Like, how do you decide who's going to be on air? Or how do you decide what questions you ask? But this was the Weather Service, and Tom Ainsworth, or maybe it was Rick Fritsch, I was saying, like, so what's important about becoming a weather forecaster? And I thought it was going to be something about, you know, like your science degree. And he's like, being comfortable with uncertainty.
Mm.
And that was just so cool for me to be able to go back and help teachers understand that that worksheet that you got right or wrong is actually not at all going to help you be a weather forecaster. You need to actually have some confidence about where you come up with your answer that's not predicated on somebody else knowing the right answer. So I would love in my ideal world to find this way where people who are out there outside of schools really were given the chance to bring their – have a chance to reflect upon and then bring those ideas into schools in a way that's, again, not stepping on teachers' toes. Anyway.
Absolutely. And do you know who nominated you?
I do. So Robin Medstack, with whom I worked at JDC for a while, working on the Elder Care Coalition, and Jen Carson, who's another person who did that. And then I know Becca Souza wrote a letter, and my sister, who had just moved to Juneau, was actually co-opted into taking a lot of people's bits and pieces and sort of putting them all together. And she's like, I don't know what, I didn't know Brenda did this. I didn't know that. So she
all
was
right.
The collator.
And one more thing that isn't STEAM or community education, one more thing about you that we don't know.
I do definitely love to knit.
Knit. Okay. That's awesome. Well, this is a fantastic event. It is the AWARES 2025 Women of Distinction. We've had the honor today to be speaking to Becky Bohr and Brenda Taylor, two of the honorees. They'll also be honoring Sherry Patterson, Valerie Ringel, and Leona Santiago posthumously for her work. And that's just fantastic. It is happening Saturday, March 8th. Doors open at 5:30 at Centennial Hall. And you can find out more information and get tickets at awareak.org. Thank you so much, Gwyneth Cheesh, for being here today and sharing your stories with us. And it's just so inspiring. It's inspiring every year when I get to talk to the Women of Distinction, and you AWARE folks always pick amazing people for this. I mean, it's the nominees who are out there and honoring others. And so it's just fantastic. But really, Gwyneth Cheesh, for being here today. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Gwyneth Cheesh.
That will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. Tomorrow, we take a look at some of the Juno School District optional programs, plus previews with Kindred Post artists and next week's March Mudroom storytelling event. Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. Hello out the road. Find the show online at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, offer feedback or suggestions, or find out how to be a guest on the show. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Programming support comes from Alaska Air Club 49, Hanson Gress, and Heritage Coffee Roasting Company. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Gwyneth Cheesh, and have a joyous Juno evening.